And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
This is the Athletic Baseball Show on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Greetings and welcome to Starkville.
Baseball Hall of Famer Jason Stark.
And then the robot said, strike.
That's why you're going in the Hall of Fame.
It's an inside the park home run, Doug Glanville.
Mike Trout is coffee at Starbucks with a double latte skinny.
Doug, are you ready to make some podcast magic?
I am ready. Bring on the magic wand. Let's do it.
Greetings and welcome to Starkville. I'm Jason Stark. I write about baseball for The Athletic. And I am joined once again by my good friend, writer, broadcaster, professor, distinguished former major leaguer, and the voice of Sunday Night Baseball on ESPN Radio, Doug Glanville. Doug, how's your offseason going? As if that term actually applies to your life.
Well, I'm in the thick of a course, University of Connecticut. So I teach Monday, Wednesday, Friday. I kind of raise the bar a little bit. It's great. I mean, I have a lot of fun. So yeah, it's busy, you know, fighting the snow, the slush, but getting ready. I can feel it. Pitchers and catchers, they're creeping around the corner. Here we go.
So close. As for me, I just got back from a fantastic week in the Magic Kingdom, Cooperstown, New York, one of my very favorite places on this planet.
Yes.
And so this week we're going to have a Hall of Fame motif running through the whole Starkville show. That includes our trivia question. Really good one. You should definitely stay tuned for this. Plus, Doug's Tales in the Dugout segment. I can't wait to hear Doug's memories of the three newest Hall of Famers, Adrian Beltre, Joe Mauer, and Todd Helton. Their careers all intersected with Doug's career, so that'll be great. Plus, Doug was also a teammate of a guy named Billy Wagner, who happens to be this week's special guest. And I'll admit, as happy as I was for the three guys who got elected last week, wasn't it impossible not to feel for Billy missing by five votes in his ninth year on the ballot, Doug?
Oh, yeah, man. This guy. Yeah, he just a force. You know, you think about Hall of Fame and you think of dominance in your time period, right, for the best at what you do. And I just see the image of Billy Wagner just being that guy coming out to close out games and the electricity, the velocity, the poise. So, you know, I feel like his time will come, but wow, he was just a dominant pitcher.
All right, coming up later in the show, as I mentioned, Doug is going to tell great tales about Adrian Beltre, Joe Mauer, Todd Helton in the Dugout segment. And those tales are so good. I'm sure that all three of those guys will mention them in their Hall of Fame speech this July. So, Doug, what do you say we talk to a guy whose Hall of Fame induction day is coming? I'm sorry that it won't be this July, but I don't know. In my experience, there's no such thing as a bad time to talk to Billy Wagner, a man that the numbers tell us was merely the most dominating left-handed reliever of all time. So, Billy, welcome to Starkville. Appreciate your carving out some time for us.
No, it's so great to see you guys. Dougie, it's been forever. It's always great to talk to you guys.
Likewise. So let's start with the election. You missed by five votes, I'm sorry to say. And you know what, Billy? If you got 73.8% of the vote in the New Hampshire primary, You know what they call that? A landslide. The Hall of Fame election, it means they're telling you wait till next year. So how would you describe your reaction and your emotions to just missing by such a small number of votes?
Well, first of all, I don't want to downplay it, but it, you know, because it's such a great opportunity. I mean, and I'm such a historian of the game and looking at who's on that list, who's gotten in, you know, but, you know, this year was different than the year before by, you know, with the expectation it could be this year. And but, you know, trying to stay as humble as possible and know that, you know, I don't want to get too high and I don't want to get too low either. You know, it was one of those things that was it was a little bit more nerve wracking than, you know, years in the past. But I mean, you know, you have the NBC nightly news down. They're following you around and waiting on that phone call. And, you know, but, you know, I'm not going to lie. It was one of probably the most disappointing things that's happened to this far in my career. But it's also it was one of the best teaching moments I could ever have as a coach, because I had to sit here and take that disappointment and show these kids who are standing there looking at me that, you know, you know, you can't rant, you just can't be upset. Sometimes you just got to grin and bear it, move on. And, but, you know, it by far and away, it was different than the years past.
Look, you know, I'm in the business of telling stories. So when there's drama on election day, that's a great thing for people like us who have to talk and write about these elections. But I recognize it's not such a great thing if you're a real person and you're in the middle of it and you have to live with the tensions. And I'm just curious, like, what that part is like, living through election day, living through the days that lead up to it. What did you do to deal with that tension and that uncertainty?
I jumped into coaching baseball. I really did. It wasn't easy because, you know, there was a, you know, a possibility that my life could change in a lot of ways as far as how people viewed me. And, you know, so trying to keep a level head and know that there was more things important that I needed to take care of and really jump on. So I was really involved in the high school scene. And so I was really diving into that. But my kids kept it, you know, they kept it fairly quiet, but they, and my wife kept it pretty quiet. And I mean, we had discussions and things like that, but, you know, not a lot. It wasn't really out loud. And there was, you know, my friends that of kids that I coach, they were here and stuff. So, you know, in a lot of ways, it was one of those embarrassing moments where you're sitting here going, you know, you really can't come and enjoy it. You can't, I mean, even if I'd have got it, it'd been that weird, awkward enjoyment just because of, I mean, you know, everybody else is planning for this. I couldn't plan for this. I mean, I literally said, I'm going to the baseball field. I remember John from the Hall of Fame was like, hey, make sure you're by the phone. And I'm like, I just can't do that. And, but it was a lot because I didn't know how to handle that disappointment being at the field. You know, I have a responsibility on things that, you know, when you're in a house, I can, you know, rant and rave in the house. I can't really do that here. And that probably was the best thing.
Well, look, I'm not you, but I am in the writer's wing of the Hall. And I remember waiting for that call, not knowing if I was going to get that call. And I mean, Billy, I couldn't sleep. I could hardly function. I mean, it's a lot to try to process. There's a lot of emotion. And how do you make yourself not feel that emotion? How can you not be frustrated, angry, all of that?
I wasn't as frustrated. It was more emotional. I mean, I had that emotional time where you sit there and you think, you know, what is it really? What's the reason that's really keeping me out? And, you know, because it's really not about me. It's what I can affect down the road. I know that as a player, you know, how I look at a Dale Murphy who's not in and a Don Mattingly who's not in is, you know, no different than I looked at the Nolan Ryan. But when you say Nolan Ryan, there's a difference in what is said. And, you know, and I mean, I've met enough Hall of Famers, and I've played with Hall of Famers, and I've helped quite a few of those guys that are in the Hall of Fame into the Hall of Fame. So, I think it's, you know, for me, emotion is was something that hit me. And I want to be in the Hall of Fame. It's, there's no question. It's just, you know, trying to control, you know, things that you can't control. It's trying to control a safe. I can't control a safe, but I'm going to get valued on a safe. And so now you're trying to control how people who don't know you talk about you, and you can't say anything. And that's a, you know, those are the emotions that you have to control. And I mean, like my kids were the best because they're irate. Lord God, thank God they're not on saying anything, but I mean, they were not pleased, but I feel bad for guys like Gary Sheffield. And I know that there's these ties to, you know, they say to the PEDs and stuff like that, but wow, anybody played against that dude knows it. I mean, that guy was good from start to finish. And, you know, and there's just so many things, that irregularities, that for people that have differences in why they're in and why they're not, that, you know, you just don't know. I mean, people were telling me last year, oh, you're a lock to be in the Hall of Fame. Well, you know, there's always that first guy who doesn't get in that's got 74.9%. So, you know.
Yeah. Well, Billy, I just want to take you back to a conversation we had in the outfield one time at Citizens Bank Park, because I think we were just talking about throwing 100 miles an hour, right? And I wonder if this sort of connects to, you know, sort of how you process stuff, because you kind of, I remember you saying to me, it's like, well, I didn't try to go out and throw 100. You know, it wasn't like I, you know, set my goal, just like a lot of times, you're not saying I'm playing Major League Baseball because I want to be in the Hall. It always seemed like you know, didn't take anything for granted. You kind of appreciated the moment. I mean, I remember you helping me change my flat tire in Citizens Bank parking lot in a full suit, right? Crawled out of the car. So you always were sort of like, you know, grounded. So I'm wondering with, you know, how you think about your career and how you kind of evolved into this power pitcher, how that kind of helps you in moments in patience, just how you see the future in the Hall of Fame and beyond.
Well, I pray a lot for patience, and God always puts certain things in my path to teach me how to deal with patience. So I became a baseball coach, and if that don't teach you patience, nothing will. So I think that I didn't take anything for granted, because I had nothing to, you know, everything was icing on the cake. But, you know, the greatest part of being a pitcher or a closer or competitor was, you know, competing against the best. And so wherever I was, whoever it was, I was facing, that was the fun part of the game. My, you know, the frustration, I mean, I never understood, you know, a lot of my games were not always pretty. You know, you go out there and you maybe walk two guys and give up a base hit and strike out a guy, you know, line drive, get doubles a guy up or something. It's not always pretty, but I always remember that the key part of the game was to win. That was the biggest thing. And I never wanted to put my team in a situation where I wasn't giving my best. And so, that's why velocity never made a big deal. Velocity was God's gift to me to get through a lot of things, but my goal at the end of the day was to win. And so if I wasn't winning and if I wasn't getting the win for our team, then it didn't matter what the individual goal was. It was really just focused on it. And that, I think that keeps you humble. And I think that keeps you planted. And, you know, where I'm from, I mean, I struck out a guy for the Atlanta Braves when I was in with Houston, and my grandfather saw it, and I pumped my fist, and he called me in the clubhouse. And he asked me, he goes, what are you doing? He goes, you haven't got more saves than Lee Smith, and you don't have as many strikeouts as Nolan Ryan. Till you get that, you just need to walk off the field and just shake hands, because you're doing what you're supposed to do. And so that was how I was raised and stuff like that. So, but I mean, that was just, you know, do your job to win.
I want to get back to the Hall of Fame in a minute, but I can remember conversations with you about this, something very close to this, which was, you're the first guy I can ever remember where fans in the stands would cheer or boo the radar gun readings. When you hit 100, 101, they'd go wild. And if you hit 99, they'd boo.
You know, and I wish, and you know what, I can tell you exactly where that happened. You know, and this is where immaturity and learning from this is the greatest thing. But I remember coming into Philadelphia, my first, you know, I'm first on the mound, and I think I pump a couple hundreds in there, and, you know, fans are going wild, popping 99, and they're booing, you know. But I remember giving up a home run to Mike Lowell at 100 mile an hour, and not one boo. Not one complaint, not anything. I remember sitting there going, what just happened? I mean, I was so mad, and it was so funny. But, you know, I don't remember walking out and people going, you suck, Wagner, or anything. Nobody said anything. They were like, nah, well, it's 100 miles an hour. What are you going to do? So it's like, well, if I keep throwing 100, you know, you can't really be criticized with so much.
Something like that. Okay, back to the Hall of Fame. I know there are no guarantees in life, but in these sorts of elections, past is normally prologue, and history would tell us that you're going to get in. Everyone who's ever gotten this close as you are has a plaque in that gallery. Plus, we've had three players get in on the last ballot just since 2017. So we're seeing that there's a 10th year push. And then there's Trevor Hoffman. I don't know if you studied this, but after 2016, Trevor was also about 30 votes away, just like you were this year. And in the next election, what happened? He missed by 5 votes. It's exactly the same as you. And then the next year, he sailed in. So you are right on that path. That's my little history lesson. What's your reaction to it?
I didn't know that because I'll be honest with you, I'm pretty shallow when it comes to that. So I honestly thought that Trevor was in, you know, with about 7 years left and to get in. So I, you know.
Yeah, it was 7 years left.
Yeah. But
that was still when he got close. That's what happened.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm glad he didn't have to deal with the going into the 10th year and stuff. But I, you know what? It is anomaly that would come up and kind of just work that way. And, you know, I'm fortunate that, you know, that relievers are not looked at in a different way. And, you know, Mariano screwed up for everybody. I've told Mo that forever, that thanks for just screwing up for everybody. But I mean, you know, it's a thankless job until you don't have a Mariano and then you don't have a Trevor and you don't have a Gianfranco or, you know, Kenley Jansen or Craig Kimbrell. These are thankless positions, you know, until that point happens. But, you know, I'm the biggest thing is I'm happy I'm still on this ballot, but I'm also happy that, you know, guys are getting recognized as relievers. I know that we talk about character and all these wonderful things, but, you know, like Frankie Rodriguez, I think when I look at his numbers and just see how awesome he is, and, I feel bad for a Gianfranco who, you know, is the epitome of a blue collar guy who goes out there and just, I mean, you know, and I love Johnny and I hope he never watches this to get mad at me, but I mean, he literally threw a 45 foot split finger and would get people out. So, I mean, I just think there's so much to dominance and to what the epitome of the game is. And, you know, I worry as a high school coach that when you value players only for like their size and they have to have a certain look and a certain air about them to be qualified, that it takes the blue collar guy out of Brooklyn playing stickball that everybody loved watching, that guy who's 5'8", that you can't play at this level. I think, you know, that's the those are the concerns for me. But I am happy that Frankie stayed on the ballot. I hope he gets more traction. I think it makes it a little bit easier for the Kimbrels and the Kenley Jansens, who will definitely have their opportunity.
Yeah, well, another Billy Wagner story. So playing at Wrigley. Facing you, I think you were the Astros. I'm trying to get my timelines right. And you throw like a 39-foot, 100-mile-an-hour slider that bounced by me, right? So I'm like, what in the world happened? Like, so after the game, and this is like Billy Wagner like had fun, and I want to marry this to the fact that you also love to close the door. So you throw this slider. I'm coming out of the locker room. You're waiting for me, my opposing team. He's like, "Hey man, I'm sorry about that. I got the ball back from the catcher and it was loaded with pine tar. And I heard that it just does all kind of crazy things. So I just wanted to see what would happen. So I just threw it and just to see what happened. And I spiked it, man. So sorry about that." I said, "Look, man, you throw too hard to experiment. You could do that in the bullpen." So, but
that's funny. I've had umpires hand me a ball and say, "Hey, what can you do with this ball right here?" And I said, "You need to take that ball and put it back because I cannot do anything to get it." That's funny. Yeah, I wasn't good enough to do those things. I listened to guys who could go out there and do some things on a ball, and man, I just was not good enough to do that. And I mean, I would overthink that like no tomorrow.
Yeah, I was just curious, like what kept you able to, you know, be able to switch into, like, you know, you were a fun guy, great teammate, but you also had that switch. I mean, how did you do that to sort of be successful?
Well, when you play with guys like yourself, you know, that, you know, your chances are limited to win, to get to the championship, to win a World Series. So, you know, I'm a big team player. I know that there's bountiful places that say that I'm not, but I truly care about winning because my teammate means a lot. When you win, and I won in college and things like that, when you win, there's that greatest feeling that you have with your teammates. There's nothing better than having the champagne poured on you. There's nothing better than talking about years past. And you really don't ever talk about the champ, but there's the bond that you get when you win. And so, you know, I think searching for that bond is something that when I stepped on the field, you know, being a little bit smaller than most of the guys out there. I mean, when you're facing the Giants of Barry Bonds, McGuire and Sosa, you know, you can't be warm and fuzzy. I mean, sometimes you view yourself as that 10-foot monster, and that, you know, that's what it took to go out there and compete against that guy. But truly, it was about the win and doing what needed to be done to get that win.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You know, Bill, you were talking earlier about what domination looks like. I can tell you that when I'm voting on the Hall of Fame, the first thing I ask myself is, does this player have a claim to historic greatness? And in your case, that was such an easy question to answer. Among all left-handed pitchers in the live ball era, you have the best ERA, the best strikeout rate, the lowest opponent batting average, and the best whip. So apparently you were pretty good. Okay. So
at times, I guess. I mean, you look at it, there's no way to understand what that means to individuals, right? I mean, gosh, I tell you, there are so many great players that have come through and played that when you start to get to that definition of, like you were just describing, me, you know, it's so humbling. And just, you know, I don't look at those numbers, but it's one of those things when you start looking at that, and the number I've always been personally always been impressed with for myself is the batting average against, 187. I don't care about the strikeouts. I don't care about if you're hitting 187. I don't know what else to tell you. I don't know what dominance means. And I mean, I don't, but those are, that is the one number for me, because you're not getting on base. You're not doing anything. That's, you know, that, you know, 0.9 whip or whatever it is. You know, those are things I think that are what you really look at. I mean, you know, among the numbers, I mean, because like guys like, the heavy hitters, you know, they have these variables. You can look at the hits, the home runs, the RBIs. But, you know, when you're really looking at pitchers and you go, well, how, you know, where does that guy really rank? Because you can't control when and a loss and a save, but you can control strikeouts and you can control batting average against. And when you have that type of number against people for 16 years or whatever, it's I don't know what dominance means if that's not dominance.
Yeah. So if I was going to sum up why I think some voters have had a hard time voting for you, I think there are two things. One is, you said it, Mariano screwed it up for everybody. And then there's a segment of voters that just doesn't believe in voting for any closer except that guy. But the other is obviously, you know, your postseason record. And I know it's a small sample, but you did end your career with an ERA in the postseason of 10.03. And so what I did was I went through all of your postseason appearances, outing by outing. So I think I've been able to present some perspective on what those postseason numbers do and don't mean. But I wonder how you look back at those postseasons.
Well, I got two stories. Well, I won't say I wasn't very good in the postseason. I would say I wasn't as dominant in the postseason. I think the first outing in that I had in the playoffs was in Atlanta. We're getting beat 12-2 or 12-1. So I come in and I'm facing whatever. I think I give up two runs. So automatically I'm sitting with a nice warm 18. So I go out there. And I think my next outing, I'm going out there, and my next game is 98 against the Padres. Probably had one of the greatest at-bats. I mean, Jim Lairds hits a 12th pitch, opposite field, down the line, home run.
Yeah.
Trevor Hoffman comes in and blows the save. I get the win. So now I'm 1-0 with a blown save. And so all of a sudden I'm sitting there going, holy cow, you know. You know, I'm not thinking about the Hall of Fame. So my other loss comes in against Sotoguchi, who at that point was 0 for ever. And I don't know if he's even made contact. That was the first pitch I think he might have made contact and got it. So he hits a home run. There were so many things. Like, I gave up a home run to Chipper Jones. I broke his bat and it bounced off the top of the wall. I mean, this is a guy that at one point was 0 for 12 with 10 punchouts. So there was some weird stuff that liked to happen when I was playing, but I mean, for whatever it was just in the playoffs, that weirdness would happen. It would be some crazy stuff. And I'd go home and shake my hand and be like, how in God's name am I not getting that guy out? And I've done it all year, but you know, that's what it is. But on the other thing, I did hear a stat that just amazes me, and maybe I'm wrong and maybe you know about it. Ted Williams hit 200 in the playoffs. Ted Williams hit 200 in the playoffs,
yep.
And he got in the Hall of Fame. How'd he do that?
Yeah.
How'd he do that? That's what I laugh at, because it is a standard. It is an easy target to point at. But when you go, hey, he was 3-for-4 and save opportunities, and he's 1-1, and ERA doesn't matter except when it wants to matter, or when you go and say, you know, I know when I've pitched in games that had – you know, a 5-run lead and I come out there and give up a run or something, and the commentators, you know, you don't pitch well. Relievers don't pitch well when you don't have a big lead. You don't. There is so many variations of why I think we can speculate on how these things work. But, you know, I do think that's the uniqueness, and that's what I love about baseball. And that's why, you know, having opinions about why guys are what they are so awesome. And so, you know, I think I enjoy hearing somebody, as much as it hurts at times, but to hear somebody say that, you know what, I don't think Wagner's a Hall of Famer, and tell me why, I absolutely have the most respect in the world for those people. Because, you know, I'm not going to sit there that's not for me to debate. I think those are the things that is so great about baseball, is having the debates.
Can I ask you about one game that you didn't pitch in? I've always wondered about this. Game 7, 2006. NLCS, Mets, Cardinals. I'm just wondering how you look back at that game. You never got to play in a World Series. The Mets were one win away, and you never got to pitch.
It sucked. And I tell you, you know, I think the game before I came in and held a lead against St. Louis, and I think it was shaky at best. I think it was a 4 or 5 run lead. I gave up a run. And then the next night, you know, we go out there and it's just dramatic. And we had 3 innings where we had bases loaded, and it came down to, you know, I think we were, you know, just, you know, Aaron Hyman had thrown the ball so well at that point. I think Willie was going with the hot hand at that point. I think Willie was going with the hot hand. And I think, you know what, I would much rather have been out there by all means, but I also know that if we tied up, I'm probably going out there. If I don't tie, that's how he'd used me all year long. So I don't know, you know, it's definitely, you know, not easy to stomach knowing that you know, you're that close and you didn't get in.
Yeah. Billy, I'm just, you know, wondering about, you know, a lot of things have shifted over the years since we retired and, you know, moved on. How did you see today's game with like all the new rules this past season? And like, where do you think you fit in that landscape in terms of, you know, this is now also how they're going to evaluate Hall of Fame candidacy with sort of like all these new criteria around, you know, whatever it is, base running, pitch clocks, all these things. How did you see the season last year?
Well, you know what? There's things I did like. I like the pitch clock. I like, hey, let's get the ball. Let's go to work. I mean, there's no rhyme or reason. You know your strength. And I had a great conversation with Roger Clemens on the golf course talking about this. And he's like, well, I don't need 25 seconds to figure out what I'm going to throw. I know what I'm competing in. I know what my job is. I think what is the hardest thing for pitchers now is you can't really control space inside to a hitter. Like, I can't throw inside to you, double up on you, Doug, because they're probably gonna think I'm throwing at you. You know, I can't create that, you know, that space for the outside corner as much as. And so the guys today, they throw, they're talented. They're way more consistently talented than in the past. I mean, you nowadays every guy comes out of the bullpen throwing 100, you know, and 95 minor sliders and splits, and they're tremendous. But now the difference is, they have to throw in such a, you know, the cube that man, when you see a guy that does have put up good numbers in today's game, I think that is such a tremendous thing. I don't think we'll ever see the 300 wins like we had before because the game's changed, but and the innings are different. But but there's a lot of things. I like the bags being bigger. Now, I am biased because my son's a player in AAA now, and he's a hitter. And so, you know, going to a game and watching a minor league game is so much more fun than sitting there falling asleep in a 5-hour game. And so now it's there's a little bit more. Pitchers throw a lot more strikes. I think, you know, it's more exciting. You know, I think there's positives to it. You know, I don't think I would like the instant replays or the reviews all the time, because I mean, I'm 100% sure I got a few calls that I don't want being overturned, but I just think, you know, there's some good and there's some bad, but I think at this day, you know, I don't want to be Debbie Downer. I think the game is great. I think the players are tremendous. I just, it would be hard for older players to create and pitch. I think I could pitch in that era. I just don't think I would be as dominating, because I don't think, you know, pitching inside like I like to pitch would is as accomplished feat now, where mostly it's, you know, 90 to 95% of the game is pitched middle away with hard sliders. When you're watching a guy throw 105 miles an hour, the next pitch is a 95 mile slider and you're shaking your head. So I think that has changed a little bit, but I mean, I still love to watch it. I still watch the games. I love watching, I've got 5 or 6 teams that I watch and I enjoy. I mean, I love watching the Phillies play. I love the environment. I love being a fan. My kids go to the Philly and watch, go down to Houston. Of course, I just think, you know, in some ways I think it's harder for pitchers. I tell my son, and he doesn't like me when I say this, but I said, I can't believe that nobody's hit 400 yet. Because you have to throw it down the middle now, buddy. There's no, you just have to throw it down the middle. So he doesn't like me when I say that.
I've often wished there was a Ripley's, believe it or not, of baseball, because if there was, like, your little tail would be chapter one, because you're born right-handed, but you threw a baseball 100 miles an hour left-handed. Billy, How is that humanly possible?
Well, I do give all the credit to God, because I'll be honest with you. I mean, there's no rhyme or reason that a 5 foot nothing, 100 pounds of nothing would get an opportunity to pitch in the big leagues. Not only, be naturally righty, go out there and you're off arm and pitch. But it just tells you how blessed I've been and how, when it comes down, like we talk about the Hall of Fame and they talk about how many attempts and how close I'm getting, the patience and the understanding that I've been blessed my whole life. I just didn't really realize it. And now to be able to sit back and look at all the blessings and know that, if it takes 10 times to get in the Hall of Fame, so be it.
You should tell people who don't know your story how this all came about, because you broke your arm, your right arm, which caused you to learn how to throw left-handed.
Well, which version do you want me to tell you? Because I tell you, the ones that I hear now are much better than the ones that I hear. The greatest story, I'll tell the real story after this, but the best story that I hear is that I was 19, I was in college, I broke my arm, and I just came out and I said, I'm going to pitch left-handed, and I did it. I mean, that was just how good I really was. So I'm like, when I heard that a couple times, and I really am like, I should just wing that and go with it, because that sounds way better. But unfortunately, it was nothing like that. It was, I love playing football. Football was my favorite sport. I wasn't very big, but everybody around me was. And so I would have this guy named Chip come over and we would play. And I had a hat football. We would play and he fell on me, broke my right arm. And so I had my cast on, went through the whole cast period. And then after that, it was a couple months later, I'm out on the monkey bars messing around as a kid and fall off, break my right arm again. And
oh my goodness, twice.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, accident prone, maybe. Yeah. And so, I broke my collarbone once. I broke my collarbone in high school playing football. I mean, it didn't take much longer for me to realize that football probably wasn't the sport for me, but I think those things you don't realize happen for a reason. But I mean, Kenny Rogers, once time he challenged me to throw right-handed in Philly, and he came out and he goes, I think I got you. He goes, I think I can throw harder than you and further than you right-handed. I went, well, let's see what you got. We're standing at the batting cage. And he throws a ball and he throws it to third base and he's feeling pretty good about himself. Well, I threw it in the stands. I came out right hand, threw it in the stands. And he looked at me and said, well, I'm naturally right-handed. I said, and he just, it was so, but I mean, that those are the, those are the weird blessings.
Yeah. Hey, what's the next best thing that you do with your left hand besides throw on?
Nothing. I can't do anything. I could stab myself. I am useless left-handed. I mean, I can't do, let's see. I can't do anything. I can't write. I can't eat. I can't do anything. I mean, drinking is decent, but I mean, it's crazy. I can't do much left-handed.
Wow. That is remarkable.
But Daryl Kyle was naturally left-handed and pitch right-handed. And so me and him would trade gloves in the Astrodome and we would play catch. And he could throw, and everybody that faced Daryl knew that he had probably one of the greatest curveballs ever. Well, he would throw, he could throw right-handed, he could throw a left-handed curveball the same way. It was unbelievable. Yeah, I mean, I think there's other guys out there that are weird like me, but man, that was pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, no, like Andrew Jones, batting practice, lefty, I mean, bombs. I mean, incredible. One quick question. Alpaca farms, man. I remember is that still happening, man, or what's happening?
Well, I rode that thing as long as I could. I cashed out, made some money, and then but I started coaching. I we enjoyed it. It was pretty neat. It was something that was unusual, but we did it for, I don't know, maybe 18 years, and then retired, and we kind of got out because I started coaching so much. I was like, I'm never home to do anything. So we got out of that just in time because I think the market crashed the next year. And so, lucky me. But it was a neat little thing. I mean, not many times you get seen, able to deliver an alpaca baby on TV. But, I've been able to do a few weird things.
Well, can you give me, like, the top two, three things you learn from alpacas or alpaca farm?
No, I have no idea. Well, they poop and they poop and eat in the same place. It's the weirdest, nastiest, most disgusting thing ever. So, I mean, yeah, I, you know, and their fiber is supposed to be this tremendous wool and nice, and it is, and but it's different. I mean, they are friendly though. They are friendly for the most part. My kids loved it and stuff like that. It was a great, you know, bonding little period. My boys were had none of it, but my daughter and I, she liked to do it. She raised some little Kriya, so it was pretty cool at times. But yeah, you know, it's a little different than raising a horse or raising a cow.
I bet it is. All right, one more thing before we let you go. I want to ask you about what it was like to face the three guys who did get into the Hall of Fame last week, plus one other hitter. So just give me quick reviews on these guys. Let's start with Adrian Beltre. He was 0-for-6 against you with two strikeouts.
Yeah, but he was 19 years old. I don't think he even – I mean, he was so emotional at that point. I remember him being – you know, he was young, so you really didn't know him. You knew that he had crazy talent, but he was so emotional. Yeah. And stuff like that at that point. He was not the hitter he became, or he'd have probably went 3-for-6. But he was completely different at that point. I mean, what you watched him evolve into was just – I mean, I tell you, when I watched him, I enjoyed – he's the guy you wanted to play with because there was nothing better than having fun. Him and Miguel Cabrera, those two are the two that I was like, man, I would enjoy playing with them because – there was never a tense moment. You never felt uptight. And you could sit there, and I mean, somebody pulling their jersey out or somebody can – I can't imagine having him come up and talking, trying to be serious with me during a ninth inning and stuff like that. So, I thought he was neat. I think – I don't know if I faced Joe Mauer.
Yeah, one at bat. You were with the Mets, 2007. You struck out a guy who was really hard to strike out. You don't remember it, right?
Nope.
Okay, you were unhittable. That's all we need to know. Okay.
Well, I mean, I did not know that, but okay. But I do. You know what's funny? I do. I remember going there with the Braves, and I got Joe to sign me a jersey. So, I mean, you couldn't not watch him and root for him. And as soon as you spoke to him, you knew you were a fan anyway. He was like, he was perfect, the perfect politician for baseball. So you're like, man, all right. So I know where I sit. But, he was just – you know, it stands out is to be a catcher for really the 10 years, to go get the batting titles, you know, an MVP. I mean, to do that when catchers just – I know how I treat catchers. So, I mean, that was on top of that. And play, right. You know, he was just so impressive. I tell you, I couldn't be happier for him. Now, my other guy, my buddy, Todd Helton.
3-for-9. You only struck him out two times.
That dude took me deep one time. He grunted in Colorado, and he ran, and I'd yell at him. I mean, we are buddies. But he said something to me one time. He would come in, you go into him like in April, and he'd be like, oh, I suck. I'm not doing well. I'm hitting 120. Oh, I hate it. Pitcher's curse. And I would yell at him. He's talking about this, and I come back and the end of the year, you know, and he's hitting 340 and 40 home runs. And I'm like, what happened? Well, you know, I made a few shots. Like, shut up. But he was the best at, you know, he competed. I mean, I tell you, there was just something special. I don't care where that guy would have played. He was just such a good competitor, and he gave you no at bats. There was no free passes at bats in there. And so, you know, I tell you, for me, I could care less about striking him out. I was just hoping he was going to get himself out. He was just that good of a player that, you know, I faced a lot of the Hall of Famers, but there's a few that when like Todd, I would face those guys way more than I would want to face Todd Helton. He was a total hitter. He could hit. He could get on base. He wasn't afraid to give himself up and get a single and do the little things. That's what stood out to me about Todd. He was just a phenomenal competitor.
Yeah. Okay. One more guy. Do you remember a guy named Doug Glanville? He played in the National League just about the time you were there. And so he went 2-for-13 against you. Four punchouts. So that's twice as many strikeouts as hits. What do you remember about Glanville? Easy out?
No. Dougie was so fast that you just, all you tried to do is you just didn't, you wanted him to get himself out because he wasn't normally a guy that you struck out. So you didn't go out there saying, all right, I'm going to do it. You really tried to let him get, you put the ball in play, get him out. And that's really how I approached it because he could put the ball. You just had, he was smart enough to know that you couldn't take anything for granted because he could lay down a bunt. He would do all the things that it took to win. And so that's what made Dougie so hard to face. And so when you got him out, you just, because he's the type of guy that all of a sudden gets on and drives you crazy on the bases. And then the guy behind him takes you deep. So Dougie was no fun to face.
Do you want to reminisce about that big RBI single you got off Billy in 2000 with Desi Relliford in the ninth? I'm sure you remember.
Was that in Houston? Where was that?
I don't know. You're supposed to reminisce. I don't even know.
Well, I know I got an infield hit with the Rangers. I hit it down the third base line. Yeah. The guy, okay. I do remember that. I mean, I love the challenge. You know, you see a guy throwing 100, and I always enjoyed that. So that was velocity was good for me. Actually, it was the wrinkle. I remember pinch hitting off him. I fouled one back, and it was almost like, all right, I'm not throwing that again. And then he threw all these sliders, and I was done. But yeah, we had a great time and he was so much fun as a teammate. Including changing my tire. I appreciate that. I mean, I had a Range Rover and came back from the trip and the tire was flat and we're in the parking garage and we're like, oh, do we call AAA? And before we knew it, Billy was in a suit. I think he might even had a vest on and he crawled under the, I was like, I can change the tire. No problem, man. It was like oil and everything. So appreciate you, Billy. Appreciate you very much.
Anything for you.
Hey, Billy, I know you got to go coach. We can't tell you how much we appreciate that you took the time to talk about all of this. Pretty sure we'll be seeing you in Cooperstown July of 2025, but mostly thank you.
No, thank you guys. It's great to catch up. I could do this all day. It's just, you know, one of those odd jobs, but I really appreciate everything. Thank you guys.
All right, it's that time again. It's time for listener trivia, our way of involving you, our favorite listeners in this show. So, Doug, pressure is on us this week, man. Mentioned this in our last show. We're coming off our greatest trivia season in recorded Starkville history because we got at least one trivia question right in every calendar month on which we attempted to trivialize. Okay.
So yes, we did.
This is our, if we're going to keep that streak going, this is our last chance in January.
Ooh.
I actually think we have a good shot. What about you? Are you feeling the trivia buzz right now?
I'm feeling pretty good. Especially Operation Multiple Choice is lurking. So, you know, it's above the threshold. So when you have seven, that's a big number. Yeah. So, you know, we might work that magic, but I feel pretty good. I mean, we should be in good shape. I mean, you're a Hall of Fame person, so you know you should have some insight on this. So let's roll.
Yeah, just for those who maybe haven't listened to this segment, Doug is alluding to the fact that he's about to employ a strategic usage of the Glanville line
to help us
borderline cheat. All right, so on that note, let's welcome in this week's special trivia guest star. It is Ben Rivas. Ben, welcome back to Starkville. You have attempted to stump us before. Am I right?
You're right. It's good to be back. And whether you get it right or not, I'm just happy to be here. So,
okay. I think we used the Glanville cheating scheme to get the last one right. Does that sound accurate?
Yeah, I'm very familiar with Operation Multiple Choice. Yes.
Yes. He has the right terminology, Operation Multiple Choice.
Okay, so just so people know who you are, just remind everyone where you're from, what team you root for, the Cardinals, and how you came up with this question.
Yeah, I'm from St. Louis. I actually live in L.A. now, but still a Cardinals fan. And I came up with this one. Actually, it's always Cardinals inspired. I'm just thinking about Yadier Molina a little bit and him retiring. And that's been weird because he's been there my whole life. We saw what happened when he was gone for 1 year. So that's kind of what the inspiration for this question. Yeah.
Well, I just spent the week in Cooperstown looking up all sorts of fun, historical Hall of Fame tidbits. So I do feel like we have an excellent shot at this one. So, Ben, it's that time. It's time for you to hit us with your trivia question.
All right. So two members of this year's Hall of Fame class, Joe Mauer and Todd Helton, played their entire career for one franchise. Since 2010, there have been seven other one-team Hall of Fame players elected by the writers. Can you name them?
First off, I love this question. I think I actually know the answer to this question, but you've done this before. You understand seven answers is way above the Granville line for how many correct answers Doug thinks should be required to get. So I'll let you and Doug negotiate this now. I'm just going to get out of the way for a minute.
See, I'm not going to be too tough on this because, you know, we have a Hall of Fame voter in here. So I feel like I don't want to go World Series structure of 4 out of 7. So I'm going to go bold and I'm going to request that we go 6 out of 7. We, 7 guesses, 6 right. We have no excuse here. So and it's 2010. So my memory is better than when I played for those years. So 6 out of 7, 7 guesses, 6. That's what I'm shooting for.
All right. What do you think? I can tell you, I think I know all 7, but 6 out of 7, I feel like we have got this. See, when Mauer and Helton both got elected last week, I was writing all about it. I actually researched a tidbit on one team Hall of Famers. I knew 4 of them off the top of my head. Mariano Rivera and Derek Jeter were obviously 2. Right. Jeff Bagwell, Rick Biggio were obviously 3 and 4. So Rivera, Jeter, Bagwell, Biggio. And then I went in to that writer's wing in 2019 with Edgar Martinez. So that gives me 5 without really even breaking hard, okay? So then there's Chipper. Okay, that's clearly 6. And I think that the 7th is Barry Larkin. I'm just a little worried he was before 2010. So, look, man, I've already done most of the work. Possibly all the work for you. But do you think I missed anybody? It's possible Larkin was pre-2010 and I forgot somebody. What are your thoughts on this one?
Okay, question. So that would be major league, right? It's not like they were in the minors and then it's all major league time. And so Bagwell never played. He was a Red Sox or he was somewhere, but he never played the big leagues.
Traded before he reached the big league. So I'm assuming
So now what about Junior? What about Junior?
Junior went to trade it to the Reds.
And then the Reds.
White Sox and...
All right, stretching him out. Biggio, Tony Gwynn, where'd he play?
Yeah, Tony Gwynn only played in one town, but he has to be before 2010. Him and Ripken were both before 2010.
Ripken, he was definitely before that. He was the same year as Ripken?
Yes.
Okay. I think I have the sleeper. Wait, how many do you have? Larkin?
Well, I gave you 7, but possibly one of them is the wrong time frame. What do you got?
My sleeper is Alan Trammell because Detroit Tigers, and he was like recent.
Yeah.
So I don't know what year.
Here's the problem.
Did he play for someone else?
No. He played for the Tigers, but he was not elected by the writers. He was on a veterans committee that I actually served on. So I could.
Oh, so it doesn't count? Oh, yeah. You didn't read the fine print.
Good sleeper, but you should have slept right through it.
That felt so good. So that's all I got. Like, I have Edgar. Yeah. Chipper. I'm going to go with that list. I think it's dead on.
Okay. So,
unless it's Alan Trammell.
Regardless of the Alan Trammell sleeper glitch, I feel like we are in excellent position to crush this. So, just to repeat it, Ben, here is our list. We've got Mariano and Jeter. That's 2. Bagwell and Biggio is 4. Edgar, Chipper, Barry Larkin is 7. How'd we do?
Well, it's I didn't think I'd be able to stump a Hall of Fame expert. That's 7 out of 7.
So. Oh, wow. Very nice. Yeah.
That's pretty exciting. I just did so much Hall of Fame stuff that it's in my brain. But Doug, look at it this way. we have done it again. 2024 in the books. How many correct trivia answers? One.
So, okay, yeah.
Yes, what do you think? Should we just retire from this now? Have some other kind of segment next week?
Well, we retired last year, and then we brought it back, so that's all right. We can, we come out of retirement and do what a lot of players do.
Okay, so only come out of retirement when we're going to get it right. I like this.
Yeah, I like it.
Anyway, that was fun. Guess what? It's now about to get more fun, and that's because the best part of this segment is coming right up. As you all know, that's the part of the segment that doesn't involve us at all. So it's time to bring in the mayor of Starkville, Tim McMaster, to play another epic play-by-play clip involving one of this week's answers. Tim, so many great options for you this week. I can't wait to see what you came up with.
Yeah.
Yeah. And before I get to that, credit to Doug, because Trammell was a great pull, even though it's not technically the writer. So, like, that could have been weird, like, loophole answer to throw you guys off. And we even covered that, even though it wasn't part of the answer. So,
I just knocked off seven answers pretty much off the top of my head. And you want to give credit to the wrong answer by Doug Landon.
That's what I'm doing. I got to keep you guys both built up here. All right, we're going to stick. So I went through the seven guys and, you know, how do you pick a moment, right? They're all Hall of Famers. They all played with one team. But what it came down to, against my better judgment, was the best finish as far as playing in front of that fan base. So we're going back with Derek Jeter. His final game at Yankee Stadium, his final at bat. Here you go.
Yeah.
Well, the script is there. The last page is in Derek's hands. Neat deals. Base hit to right field. Here comes Richardson. Here's the throw for Markakis. Richardson is safe. Derek Jeter ends his final game with a walk-off single. Derek Jeter, where fantasy becomes reality. Did you have any doubt?
It wasn't his final game because he actually ended up playing at Fenway, I think, over that final weekend.
No, he went to Fenway. I don't think he played.
Yeah, I think he had one at bat, and I think he got a hit.
He got a base hit. Yeah, he got a base hit.
You're right.
But
great call with Joe Kelly. By Michael Kay. That was a great call. Yeah.
Great call. Yeah. Goosebumpy call. I remember I was on Baseball Tonight when that happened. And it's funny that Michael said the script's right in front of him because we came back and I said, who writes these scripts? Hey, Ben, we loved your question. Great to talk to you again. Please come back and visit us again in Starkville real soon, okay?
I'd love to. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Thanks, Ben. Thank you, Ben. Appreciate it.
All right, thanks.
Sliding, catching, and going into the dugout.
Spring training. It's just over the horizon, but we're here in the offseason, so that means it is time to do one of our favorite offseason things. What do you say we go hang out in the dugout where our pal, Doug Glanville, is telling his world-famous baseball stories to literally anyone who will listen? So, Doug, since we just elected three Hall of Famers from your generation, I can't think of a better topic for this week's trip to the dugout. What do you say you tell us a quick story from those archives in your head about all three of the newest Hall of Famers? You want to start with Adrian Beltre?
You know, the way I thought about this is, you know, what's the question I would ask to sum up how good these guys were? And I think Adrian Beltre, and combine that with my story of experience with the or against them, Adrian Beltre had asked the question, did he teleport? That's the question I would ask. So when he was younger, Dodgers, I laid down a bunt, and he was at third base. And I'm like, I was so confident that I was going to make it to first that I pretty much could have started my turn. I was like, let me just start going to my turn, because that's like a double. And then I had that Harold Reynolds moment where he looked at Bo Jackson after he threw the ball from the left field fence and threw him out at home and like, what just happened? Where did that come from? And sure enough, I bunted this great bunt and Beltre threw me out at first base by a half a step. And it was one of those I had to look at the instant replay. Like, wait a minute. Like, I was taking my turn and this guy threw me out. And Beltre had that signature, almost like slingshot sidearm throw that he was known for. where he could come in and throw across his body and just throw these 95-mile-an-hour lasers and really defy the speed that you have trying to get to the bag. So that was it for my bunting on Adrian Beltran. I know he played in the American League a lot, but wow. I mean, that was the one time I remember laying a bunt down, absolutely sure I'm going to make it, and be thrown out by a half a step. Just ridiculous.
You and everybody else. All right, what about Joe Mauer?
Joe Mauer, I didn't have a ton of, you know, I guess the interleague thing and all that, but I know the legend of Joe Mauer revolved around, does he always hit the barrel? That's the question I had. This guy just refused to break bats. You could, you know, just always squaring the ball up. And that was sort of a reputational thing that started to kind of spread. I mean, there was rumors that he broke one bat a year. He used the same bat for 3 years. You know, I mean, but this guy, you know, was like that storyline of just good hitter, never giving up at bats, patient, stayed through the ball. It wasn't necessarily about the home run, but he knew he had power, kind of a Tony Gwynn kind of framework. Just amazing. And just to do that from the catching position just takes it to another level. So, you know, Joe Mauer just, you know, it's quiet, executed. And then when you all said and done, you go, man, you're like, that guy was impossible to get out. And that's where Joe Mauer's in the Hall of Fame.
Broke one bat a year. Okay. Hey, I love these stories. You must also have one about Todd Helton.
Todd Helton. I have to second what our guest Billy Wagner expressed. Just absolutely a tough out. But my question for Todd Helton is, was he looking for that pitch? Because every single thing you threw at this guy, he looked like he was on. I mean, I just didn't even understand it. Like forkball, splitter, curveball, slider, he was always, always in a great hitting position. And as Wagner said, didn't give up a single at bat, but line drive after line drive. But I was always amazed to be a 2-0 count and he'd be sitting on a curveball that was on the outer third of the plate and still be able to stay back and drive it the other way. And I'm just like, was he looking for that? You know, just amazing on how much he was in control of an at-bat. Just everything he hit hard. He was sitting, it seemed like he was in sitting position all the time. Just never looked bad. I mean, just remarkable. Just a guy that I just remember every single at-bat and some of the things he would pull off, the upper deck home runs, just the ability to just turn a game around. Just a phenomenal, pure, stone-cold hitter.
Mm-hmm. All right, let me tell you my Todd Helton story. I'm sure you remember this, Doug. I'm sure a lot of people do. I used to appear regularly on the late, great Mike and Mike show on ESPN with Mike Greenberg and Mike Golic. And the thing everyone seems to remember about all those segments that I did on that show is not any wit or wisdom that I ever imparted. The only thing they remember is the trivia questions that I asked those guys, which I basically played the role of Billy Wagner, and they played the role of all the people swinging at missing. So we had a running joke on that show that when they were stumped, they should just answer, what, Doug? Todd Helton, right? Because it felt like Todd Helton was always the forgotten answer to every question. My trivia questions tend to be, you know, how many active players, blah, blah, blah. So this went on for years to the point where even if they were stumped on a pitching question, Golic would just say, I don't know, Todd Helton? So Todd was well aware that this was going on, of course. But then he announced his retirement, and that was going to end an era, two eras, one in Colorado, one in trivia. So the last week of his career, you know what I convinced him to do? I asked him if he would like to ask the weekly trivia question on Mike and Mike, and he did it. So they tee up the question, and instead of me, Todd Helton pops on. He says, hey, Mike and Mike. It's not Jason this week. It's me, Todd Helton. And I got a question about me. It was so great. So when I saw Todd last week in Cooperstown, I congratulated him. And I said, we know you are already in the trivia hall.
Yeah, for sure.
Don't we need to build one of those in Starkville, a trivia hall of fame?
Oh, man, you should have had him call in anonymously and then reveal that he was Todd Helton. Oh, my gosh. And let them get it right.
Right. Okay. Well, among all the things that I would like you to plan for Starkville, the Trivia Hall of Fame and Museum, put that on there. Okay. Just put it your list. Yeah. You'll get around to it one of these decades, I'm sure.
I will. Right.
Yeah. Okay. That's going to do it for this week's show. We'll be bringing you podcast magic just like this all off season long on The Athletic Baseball Show, which is available in its entirety, absolutely free, everywhere you get your podcasts. And if you'd like to read any of the amazing hot stove baseball coverage or Hall of Fame baseball coverage in The Athletic, we can tell you how. Just go to theathletic.com/baseball show. And if you're a new subscriber, you can subscribe for just $1.99 a month for the next 12 months. But also remember, you too can be part of this podcast, because every show we pick some fun listener trivia question. Then that lucky listener gets to join us right here and prove that there's almost no baseball trivia question we can't get wrong. Not today's, of course, but hence the term almost.
Almost.
So to join us, what would you do? You could always email us at Starkville@theathletic.com, or you can do what Ben Remus did this week. Hit us with your questions via X, the site once known as Twitter. And we have Doug Glanville with us. He was formerly once known as Doug Glanville. Okay. So how would people direct a question at you on X, formerly known as
Yeah, I just put a little more accent on the G in Doug. That's the only difference. So I was formerly known. But it's the same thing. At, spelling the same, DougGlanville. That's it.
Once spelled Doug Glanville, and you're still spelled Doug Glanville. It's very helpful to know that. Amazing. I am at Jason S-T. So that's J-A-Y-S-O-N-S-T. Remember to hashtag your questions, hashtag Starkville QS. So, Doug, thanks for playing. Thanks to Billy Wagner for visiting us. Thanks to Ben Remus for the great trivia question, which we nailed. Thanks to the mayor of Starkville, Tim McMaster, for producing us and putting up with us. And thanks to you all for listening. Doug and I will see you soon.
Starkville.